Listen every Saturday at 1 p.m. for Answers for Elders.
Now, back to Open House with Team Reba.
Welcome back to Open House with Team Reba. I'm Reba Hass of Team Reba, RE/MAX Metro East Side. And my usual co-host, Eric Osnes of Home Street Bank, is not here with us today, but he'll be back with us next week. And in the meantime, I'm having fun getting a chance to interview a past and, current guest, of course, obviously, but Sean Martin from Rental Housing Association. We're going to get you back on air here with us. All right. So, yeah, thanks for waving at the folks at Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, so before we went on the break, we were talking, yes, there's all this movement in the market and what's happening and how people are impacted by what's happening with the sale of these small multi-units. But can you give more context for people about what's actually happening right now?
What's happening in the political world?
Why is there a lawsuit?
Well, so yeah, there's a lot happening. So I guess Seattle's the easy kind of target to go mm-hmm. to just because it's so frequent. So this has been, for about 2.5 to 3 years, kind of a running theme at this point, which is every 2 to 3 months, there's going to be a new bill brought before council that's in some way going to regulate landlords in the city. Okay. And so the current stuff that we're looking at, well, as far as legal action, we had an ordinance passed fall of 2016, kicked in officially July of 2017, called First in Time,
right,
which is the first person in the door that gets you a completed application and meets your criteria, you have to rent to them. Doesn't matter how much of a bad gut instinct you have, if they're combative, harassing people, mm-hmm. Whatever. I mean, they have bumper stickers on their car that, you don't really find tasteful. Pick any reason that would give you like this gut reaction. This person might be a problem with my other tenants.
Right.
Or might be irresponsible in some way. That judgment's gone. And so there's a lawsuit that was filed against the city nearly a year ago, actually. Mm-hmm. And it had a court hearing about 3 weeks ago, roughly 2.5, 3 weeks ago. And we should get a judgment, a ruling on that anytime, really. Sometime okay. in the next, I would say, 3 to 6 week time frame. We'll see what the city comes back with, what the judge comes back with as far as the city's ordinance goes. And
is that whether or not it can continue?
Whether or not the first in time rule is legal. And okay. so we're trying to get it tossed out because we just think that there are all sorts of problems. Not even getting into is this helping people or not side of things, which the feedback we've even gotten from staff at the city is that it's not helping people, that it's supposed to help.
But interesting. Assuming not the folks putting this in place, but just people who work at the city.
Well, no. So the feedback we get, it's the Office for Civil Rights, General. I'm not going to throw them under the bus necessarily because they are carrying out council's action. I mean, council passed the law. So, staff does
well, and they do a lot of good work.
They
do a lot of good work.
And so the feedback that we're getting kind of anecdotally is, first in time, what does that mean? Who can be first in line?
Right.
Who's easiest, got the easiest access to be first in line on an online application or
You're
can
right.
get to a showing quickly, during the middle of a work day or something like that. It's not someone that works 2 jobs.
Right.
Has, public transportation is the only way they can get around all that, low income renters.
Exactly. That's what some of the property managers that we've had on the show have had to say, because they said a lot of people who rent may not have a vehicle.
Yep.
And so now you've put them at a disadvantage.
Yep.
So now you've still put people who have the most in a position of beating out those who have the least.
Yeah, and that's just and that's just like physically arriving,
right?
And you take care of it that way. And then what do you look at, like, as a landlord? Okay, this law was passed. What do I do if I have to rent to the very first person that qualifies with a completed application? I'm going to make sure that they are very well qualified.
Right.
I'm going to raise my credit score higher.
Yeah.
I'm going to make it so they have to have maybe an additional landlord reference, different kind of things like that.
Right.
Who, again, does that help? It's not, the person working a couple part-time jobs making ends meet. So this lawsuit,
That for me was even one of those that I had talked about as people came out of the recession, or if people are like getting back on their feet, it takes away from the right of the landlord to have flexibility.
Yeah.
Because I can tell you during the recession, when so many people lost their homes and their credit and everything else was just trashed, the conversations I had with some of those customers was, hey, look, if you have some money saved up or there's an opportunity to do this, go to a landlord. You know, the best thing you can do is have communication and explain why your credit score has gotten trashed and where you're at right now. Because if they do everything strictly by score, you don't have a chance.
Yeah, we can't explain things away. We can't do stuff that way any longer because it's literally, what's your criteria? Do you meet it? And there's no more conversation because if you change that criteria for that one person trying to help them out, you're opening yourselves up to a lawsuit by, you know, whoever else came by the place where you didn't make that exception for them. So it's it's crazy. It's just standardized everything to the point of there's no interaction as far as like a personal relationship. You really are just doing the kind of the corporate by the book. Here's what it is. And if you don't make it, sorry, go find somewhere else.
And there's still so many people in America that really don't have enough financial literacy that even from that standpoint, there's a lot of folks who still don't even know how to best get their credit score in a position that puts them in a best place, like for something like this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay, I'm totally with you on that. So I interrupted part of that to throw that in.
No, it's a great point. I mean, it completely dovetails into, the, you know, because it's not, we can talk about these things as standalone issues, but you throw them in the same pot and boil it up. You know, it's
like I did
soup
with my pen there.
Yeah, you flip. You know, we're making a soup, okay? You got, like, your potatoes over here, your ham. I don't know what we're making, cream of potato with ham and some cheese, whatever. They taste different on their own. You throw them together. You got to cook it all up.
I'm going to get hungry now.
Yeah. And so, you know, first in time, okay, you take that as a standalone thing. You think, well, maybe that's fair. Maybe landlords, you know, were unknowingly, which was the justification, they unknowingly discriminate against people. So we're going to take that off the table. Well, then we're going to pass a move-in fees law, and it says you can't charge more than, you know, 1 month's rent for a deposit or whatever. But another component of that law is also that if you take any adverse action, like you basically can't, for those that aren't in the know, adverse action means you change the offer. Maybe their credit came back a little low. So you say, well, I am not going to offer you the exact same terms, but I'll shorten the lease by 6 months and we'll do a little more of a test run. Or I'll ask for a higher deposit as extra security because something's off.
Yeah.
Well, that move-in fees law, you can't do that. You can't alter.
It takes away their
your
negotiation
offer because the caps
and
are
risk.
Set.
Yeah. Because it's always risk. I mean, we just got done talking about this. If a property is selling for $700,000 here and you rent it out to somebody, that's a tremendous asset that you're putting in somebody else's hands. I mean, it's a lot of folks, it's unfathomable because it's just like two Ferraris.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd never put it in that kind of format, but that's another good visual. Thank you. Yeah. I actually like that.
I'm a car guy, so if I had two Ferraris, there's no way in heck that anyone that I don't know and trust with like every bone of my body.
You're not
going to
let
out.
Them take that car out by themselves. In fact, don't you have to get trained on how to drive one of those?
No, I don't know.
There's some kind of high end car that I know you have to get taught how to drive them because some of them are very complex and have a lot of power. But the thing is like, your house is immovable, but I've seen the damage that people have done to homes, and it's, you know, tens of thousands of dollars that can happen. It's not just a couple $100 here or there. I mean, even my lower rent places in the Midwest, when someone trashes them, they're only renting for $400 a month, so I'm losing 3 months of rent when somebody trashes it.
Yeah, it hurts.
And that's if it's not even a bad trashing. That's just having to replace the carpets and some drywall work and stuff like that.
For a lot of those folks, you know, and again, you know, our demographic in the market is the small owner that owns less than 10 units, usually no more than two on average. And if they lose, you know, if there's $5,000 in damage to their unit, that takes them 2 years to make it back on the rent roll. They're hurting. They're not making tons of money. It's just like, I'm holding on to this as a retirement asset. I'm not a professional. I still go to work. And so that move-in fees law, you know, that's another one. We filed a lawsuit against the city on that one. We'll probably have our day in court sometime this summer. That's been a very long process with requesting additional information from the city and whatnot and kind of being pushed off. And it's just, you know, part of the game that you play going through these things. And then you've got other new ordinances. You know, the city's just passed last summer, fall, and we're now dealing with the fallout of it is this ban on using criminal records. You can't use criminal records or arrest records to screen anyone in Seattle any longer.
Right.
You can't even access the information. I as a, you know, rental industry professional, you call RHA, hey, can we run a criminal report? We can't even look into it in the first place for you. Because it's just gone. So it's just
period.
It's gone.
Is that just Seattle or is that
Seattle
other places?
Seattle only, yeah.
Do you expect that to go statewide?
I don't expect it to go statewide because there has been already kind of a federal, this is a national push already, and we've seen rules come down from HUD about using criminal records and arrest records in a more methodical manner, which is you have to prove by having a business case, a business reason to deny someone. So you're not just saying, well, you got a criminal record, you're convicted of, you know, DUI 4 years ago.
Right, okay.
It's context. So you're now, this is nationally, you're supposed to look at what was the nature of the crime, severity of the crime, how long ago did it occur, how old were they, all these different factors.
Yeah, because I started thinking about sex offenders, violent crimes.
Yeah.
Recent drug activity.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've had tenants who've had, you know, way long time ago stuff, because that's one of the things my brother always talks about, especially in my lower rent building, that he's always stunned that just about everybody, whoever applies, has at least some small record. Now, granted, most of them would probably go away if they legalized pot like they have here.
Right.
That's right. A big part of it.
Right.
But some of them are for much bigger things. But
the point of that is like you talk about legalizing pot, that you can't